Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. It's entirely possible, likely even, that things are worse than the very bad numbers are already telling us. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today, the last day of the craziest full month this economy has seen, maybe ever. Good to have you along, everybody. There will be, in the first few minutes of the program today, some math. And I apologize. I know that's not why you're here. But this morning's news that another 3.8 million people filed for unemployment benefits in the past week, more than 30 million since early March, obliges us to do some calculations. So, here we go. The unemployment rate before the bottom fell out of this economy was 3.5%. That went up to 4.4% in March. Next Friday morning, we get the April number, and as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports, it is almost certainly going to undershoot how many people are really out of work.
I asked several economists how high they think unemployment is right now. The average, around 20%. But the official number for April won't capture a lot of people not working because of the pandemic. Take 52-year-old Brian Forrester of Tulsa.
I finally got through to the Oklahoma Unemployment Commission. I'm kind of on hold with them right now.
Yeah, he took my call while a state worker checked on his appeal for jobless benefits. Forrester's out of work and has no income. But he wouldn't be counted as unemployed by the Labor Department because he's not actively looking for work. He had a job lined up with the Census Bureau, but it's been put on hold.
There's really not a lot of jobs out there available right now. That's what I've been doing, is basically cooling my heels.
So what's a better measure of unemployment? Bill Rogers, a former chief economist at the Labor Department, suggests the labor force participation rate.
It's the share of the civilian population that is either working or they say that they're actually searching for a job.
Rogers says a sharp decline in labor force participation will show the true scale of employment loss.
It's also capturing people who may have gotten discouraged because there aren't jobs in the world of COVID. They are concerned about if they work, they can get sick.
The Congressional Budget Office predicts labor force participation will fall to just under 60%, the lowest since the early 1970s. The hope is that as people return to work, participation will start rising again. But there are signs of unease among American workers. Bankrate's Mark Hamrick cites a recent survey.
57% are moderately to extremely concerned about their job security.
And those least likely to go back to work soon or have employers to go back to are in low-paid sectors like restaurants, hotels, nail and hair salons. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
One of the things that happens when people aren't working and shopping and spending is that state and local governments really take a hit as their tax revenues crater. Congress is actually still just talking about what they might do. The Fed has said it's willing to buy municipal bonds to make sure that market stays liquid. But really, any way you slice it, it's going to be rough. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams is on that one.
As far as state budgets go, April was supposed to be a pretty good month. Lucy Dedayan is a senior research associate at the Urban Institute.
About 15% of all income tax revenues in any single fiscal year is collected in the month of April.
But 35 states plus D.C. extended income tax deadlines to July 15th. So a lot of that expected revenue isn't coming for a while. Richard McGahey is an economist at the New School. He says for many states,
that means they don't know how much tax revenue they've got coming in till after their fiscal year starts, making it even harder for them to forecast revenues.
Even harder because other revenue numbers, like sales taxes, are in flux as well. Tim Ryan, a municipal bond portfolio manager at investment firm Nuveen, says some states can just take the hit.
Certain states have more rainy day funds than others, but I think many will look to the bond markets to at least provide some stopgap financing.
The municipal bond market is where towns, cities, states, and transportation systems go for cash in a pinch. Usually, investors love muni bonds, and the Federal Reserve stays on the sidelines. Now, the central bank says it will spend as much as $500 billion to stabilize the market. But not all states are jumping at the opportunity. For example, in New Mexico, Deputy State Treasurer Sam Collins knows revenues are going to take a hit.
We estimate it's going to be something in the range of $300 to $400 million that will be delayed from March, April, May, and June to July.
But he still views the Fed's program as a last resort. For now, he thinks the losses are something the state can absorb, although he says the full picture won't be clear until May. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
What happens when crisis hits and governments spend is that all of a sudden some people get really worried about debt. There are murmurs of that afoot in Washington the past couple of weeks, as we've been reporting on. One place it is not being talked about, over in the UK, which went hard for austerity after the financial crisis. Prime Minister Boris Johnson said today austerity is not going to be part of the route out of this crisis over there. On Wall Street today, there was some austerity, actually. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. I'm going to give you a grim economic number right now, and then I'm going to give you a grimmer one. All right, here you go. Consumer spending fell 7.5% last month, the most precipitous decline in records that go back to 1959. April is almost certainly going to look worse. That is grim. Grimmer yet is clothing sales, down 50% last month. Yes, stores are closed, so of course nobody can buy new clothes, even if they wanted to. But there is another reason that's more psychological, I guess. With so many of us staying home all day for weeks and now more than a month on end, what's even the point of getting dressed? Marketplace's Marielle Segarra has that one.
The other day, on her weekly trip to Costco, Christy Ruiz wore an oversized T-shirt, leggings, and fuzzy slippers. Yeah, slippers. Outside of the house.
It didn't even dawn on me to not wear my slippers.
She lives in Orange County, California, with her husband and their two kids.
My husband he's the kind of man who notices things like that. And normally he probably would have sent out some sly comment like, oh, you're going to wear those? Like, that's a bold statement. Nope, he didn't even notice either. He was like, whatever.
Ruiz, who's a middle school teacher, has not been buying clothes since this whole thing started. She doesn't want to spend the money. But she's also kind of like, what's the point?
In my normal non-coronavirus quarantine life, I'm leaving the house 5 days a week. I'm going out. And so, yeah, I'm putting on makeup and I'm making myself look cute.
Now there's nowhere to go and no one to see. Same goes for Chris Albu, a tech company executive who lives in Chicago. When we talked, he was supposed to be in Hawaii on vacation with his wife, Krissa, and their 11-year-old son, Teddy, who has a habit of growing out of his swimsuits.
We were going to have to buy him a couple new suits. All of us would need new gear for a new trip and got to look good at night and finally an appropriate setting for a Hawaiian shirt, too.
With everything on lockdown, they've bought no Hawaiian shirts or swimsuits or Easter outfits or button-downs for Chris to wear to work. He's been wearing the same thing day after day.
My wife's actually dubbed it my uniform, you know, black sweats and a gray sweatshirt.
It's something a lot of us take as a given. You get dressed in the morning. You try to look good because you're going to have an audience. Robin Murphy lives in Willington, Connecticut, and teaches at a community college.
I always wore business slacks. I would often wear a suit jacket. I would never wear, you know, anything that could be perceived as more dressed down because we have to be perceived as this authority figure.
Now that she's doing audio-only lectures, she wears her pajamas all day. And she admits it can be kind of depressing. Because what you wear, whether it's a suit or a fancy dress or sweatpants, can put you in a certain mindset. Denise Green is a fashion anthropologist at Cornell.
Clothing does make you feel things. You know, clothing can change your mood. It has dramatic psychological impact.
Every night since the lockdown, she and her partner, Joan, have been getting dressed up for dinner. She'll put on a vintage cocktail dress. Joan will wear a button-down shirt and trousers. They make it an event, like they're going on a date. She says life feels surreal right now. There's no routine.
And part of helping me to develop routine and essentially a kind of coping mechanism for dealing with the uncertainty that we're experiencing right now is getting dressed every day.
It seems like some clothing companies understand the psychology at play here. I've been getting promotional emails from Loft telling me to treat myself, and from Target advertising its mood-boosting graphic t-shirts. Of course, you don't have to buy clothes to get dressed. You can just grab something from your closet. Maybe not the pajamas, though. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
For the more than 30 million people now unemployed in this economy, tomorrow is going to add stress to an already stressful situation. It's the first of the month. Rent is due. We talked to some people a month or so back whose lives and jobs have been disrupted by this crisis, so we got them back on the phone to see what their Aprils have been like.
My name is April Oliver, and I live in Bozeman, Montana. I was about to start my very first job, but due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the lab was closed down.
My name is Seth Schulman. I'm a musician from Chicago, Illinois. I'm a teacher, and I play shows, and I've been pretty out of work.
My name is Maria Barrias. I was a barista and a server in Brooklyn, New York.
I filed for unemployment, and I wasn't able to get it because they told me that they didn't make enough last year, but that was a complete clerical error.
I've just been in some sort of waiting list limbo.
I was able to claim unemployment pretty early on. The $600 on top that was added because of COVID-19 have definitely been very helpful. Like, it's basically giving me like a full weekly wage.
The woman who said she might have a job for me later came back with an official offer letter saying, we're going to open up the lab.
I just heard from the school I was working for that I can start doing virtual lessons with my students again. That'll help a major amount because before it was pretty desolate.
My former manager reached out to me maybe last week. They're thinking about opening for like coffee for takeout.
I have to wait another month until my first paycheck, I think. But we feel pretty confident that we'll be able to make bills and credit card payments and all that on time.
I've got a nice enough landlord to let me pay like half of my rent, but it feels pretty pathetic having to like write a really long email or talk to them, call them and just be like, hey, things really suck. Can you spare me a bone?
I feel confident that as long as I have unemployment, I can pay for stuff.
That was April Oliver. She's in Bozeman, Montana. Seth Schulman in Chicago. Maria Barrias, she's in Brooklyn. Coming up.
Doctor influencers are gaining, in some cases, tens of thousands of followers a day.
Wash your hands. But first, let's do the numbers. Well, here you go. On the last day of April 2020, holy cow, what a month. Dow Industrial's down 288 points, 1.1%, closed at 24,345. The NASDAQ dropped 25 points, 0.2%, finished at 88.89. The S&P 500 gave back 27 points, 0.9%, 29 and 12. Overall, though, As I'm sure you've been noticing, really good month for stocks, even as the economy stops. American Airlines reported a $2.2 billion loss, speaking of economy stopping for the first quarter. It's burning through $70 million a day. Shares fell 4.9% today. Bonds fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 0.63%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Contrary to impressions that might have been given here and elsewhere, corporate performance in this crisis is not uniformly terrible. Just today, Twitter reported a spike in daily active users. Kraft Heinz reported higher revenues. Comcast had a not great report, but did benefit from a lot more people signing up for broadband internet, stuck as we are at home. The reality of this economy right now is that some companies are just going to do better than others. Marketplace's Andy Euler is on that one.
Increased demand for food staples means higher sales for companies like Kellogg's, which today reported stronger than expected earnings. John Stanton teaches food marketing at St. Joseph's University. He says people are stocking up on foods with long shelf lives. Think those Nutri-Grain Grape-tastic breakfast bars.
If you get panicky and you say, oh, I don't know if I can get to the store that often, I'm going to buy more of these products, you're much more likely to use them up. And when you go to the store, you buy them again.
Whether we keep buying Pop-Tarts and Eggo waffles after the lockdowns are over, well, Nick Rossolillo with Consensus Financial thinks we might, at least for a while, as people develop new buying habits and sales stay elevated.
If you're driving to the Grand Canyon, you have to go up the mountain first, and then you go back down the mountain, but you settle onto this high elevation plateau. I think that's what sales for a lot of these staples companies are going to do.
It's not just food companies. Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and Netflix are also seeing some benefits from folks staying at home. Facebook said yesterday its ad revenue has stabilized, and Daniel Ives at Wedbush Securities notes that Twitter today reported growth in daily active users.
They could be a net beneficiary, even though there's definitely headwinds in their business.
More users, sure, but the company also disclosed that ad revenue dropped 27% from March 11th to March 31st as the pandemic worsened. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Two more winners in this coronavirus economy, by the by. First of all, Microsoft. It reported earnings yesterday. Quite tidy, thank you. It's got an online meeting app that's doing pretty well. No shock. Also, Xbox, because no shock. Number two, Tesla. In between all the colorful, shall we say, language from CEO Elon Musk about the current state of the aforementioned quarantine, apparently people are just buying a lot of electric cars. Yeah, movie theaters are closed, but there is plenty of drama going on behind those darkened screens. Universal, the studio behind, to name just a couple, the Minions franchise and all those Jurassic Parks, is in a fight with some of the biggest theater chains in this country, AMC and Regal by name. It's a coronavirus twist on a really old Hollywood debate. When things get back to normal, are you still going to have to go see a movie in a multiplex before you can watch it at home? Marketplace's Jasmine Garst covers this screen economy for us.
It all started with a bunch of trolls, the animated kind. The way it usually works is movie theaters play films for a few months. After, you can rent that movie online. But COVID-19 shut movie theaters down. Studios pushed some movies straight to streaming, like Universal's Trolls World Tour. And it reportedly made over $100 million, a hit. With millions of Americans quarantining with their kids, of course they paid $20 to rent Trolls, says Mike Hodel, an analyst with Morningstar.
But I do think it gives the studio some increased confidence that they can evolve how they go to market over time.
Confidence enough for Universal to talk about a future where movies may get released in theaters and online at the same time. Movie chains were not happy about that, so AMC retaliated by banning all Universal movies from its chain. Regal said it would only show movies that are big screen exclusives. None of the companies replied to our request for comment. Studios get a bigger cut from digital releases than in-person tickets, so losing out on a family's worth of box office sales may still make sense for studios like Universal. But University of Miami marketing professor Arun Sharma says,
there are lots of folks who love to take their families to theaters, especially for movies which will have large audiences.
Like Universal's now postponed Fast and Furious 9. People who love seeing Vin Diesel's muscles in IMAX 3D can't do that at home. Sean Robbins is an analyst with Box Office Pro.
You know, post-Great Depression, movie theaters rebounded. Post-stock market crashes in the last few decades, movie theaters rebounded. I think that really is expectation.
Because after months stuck at home streaming, that big screen might look more appealing than ever. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
For most businesses and industries, recessions are a known quantity. Yes, this one is going to be a step beyond for everybody. But in the before times, if you ran a business, you'd know a downturn was eventually coming and you could plan. Unless you were a brand new kind of business, like, say, a participant in the influencer economy. Sometimes, but not always, attractive young people that others follow on social media. Lifestyle guides, I guess, is a layman's way to put that. And this is a weird time for them, stuck deep in their first recession as they now are. Taylor Lorenz is the technology and culture reporter at the New York Times. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
The thing that is becoming clear is that specifically in the influencer economy, you live by the influence, you kind of die by the influence when things get perilous and there's a global pandemic.
Definitely. I think right now, because influencers are these people that everyone looks to in terms of how to live, the spotlight is really on them. And there's a lot of attention in terms of how they're acting. A lot of influencers are very nervous to even post. And then other influencers we've seen have basically gotten canceled because they've flagrantly violated CDC guidelines. You had one influencer who had been diagnosed with COVID who went to the Hamptons and posted herself walking around the neighborhood. It's, you know, it runs the gamut.
Yeah. If you get it right, though, I imagine with everybody on their screen so much more that the upside is probably pretty high.
Absolutely. It is a great time for influencers to capture a new audience or reengage the audience that they have. It's just, you know, it's tough. A lot of these influencers are stuck at home themselves. So, you know, for instance, travel influencers, you know, they haven't really been able to travel anywhere. A lot of them are doing stay-at-home guides or, you know, day trips, little ways to keep kind of busy while at home because a lot of their trips are canceled. So it kind of depends. You see a lot of fitness influencers really taking off right now because people are looking for at-home workouts.
Oh, yeah, totally. I absolutely hear that. Do you suppose, and this goes to the larger context of, listen, everything in this economy is going to be different as we start getting out from under this thing. Do you suppose the influencer economy is going to change?
Yeah, I think it's going to radically change. You know, the big trend with influencers has been sort of away from ad deals the past couple of years. A lot of people associate influencers with sponsored content, and that's still the primary way most influencers monetize. But a lot more of them are realizing that it's kind of a poor way to advertise, especially in a situation like this where you have all these big retailers and bigger brands sort of cutting back their marketing budget. So they're, you know, asking followers to subscribe, you know, pay money, for instance, to be in their close friends or pay them directly for exclusive behind the scenes newsletter, things like that where they can more directly monetize their audience. I think we'll see a little bit of a shift there.
So this is a little specific, but it seems that this is a really good time for like medical influencers and doctor influencers and nurse influencers, right?
This is boom time for the medical influence industry. Doctor influencers are gaining, in some cases, tens of thousands of followers a day. A lot of them, one Dr. Darian, who has this Instagram presence where he does these little Instagram videos called Bus Stop Medicine, and he's been using it to educate people on how to keep safe, how to prevent sickness and prevent spreading sickness if you yourself have the disease. And then you see a lot of nurse-fluencers, as they're called, but, you know, nurses who are doing hand washing tutorials on Instagram Live or answering questions about their job and things like that. So that sector is really taking off.
I myself have watched some of those hand washing things early on. I mean, now, we're all experts, right?
Yeah.
Taylor Lorenz, she covers technology and culture at the New York Times. Taylor, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Molly Wood did a thing on influencers on Marketplace Tech the other day. You ought to check that out. It's part of their creators economy coverage, which you can get, of course, at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, a tale of two CEOs, if you will. Elon Musk, I mentioned already, he is not very happy about the quarantine. The CEO of Tesla isn't. He called it fascist and said people should be given back their, well, the word he actually used starts with G, ends with N, seven letters. Give people back their GD freedom, Musk said. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, on the other hand, said this in his earnings call yesterday. I worry that reopening certain places too quickly will almost guarantee future outbreaks and even worse economic outcomes. End of quote. I report, you decide. All right, we're going. Dow Industrials down 288 today, 1.1%. NASDAQ down 25, 0.2%. The S&P 500 gave back 27 points, about 0.9% there. End of the month, though, a great, great month for the markets, if not this economy. Amir Bibawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, and Rick Carr are the Marketplace editing staff. Betsy Streisand is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.